SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Fantasy Sports Today, our lunch hour here on FST. Craig Mish along with Davis Maddock. We got you for another hour here on the program, of course, this weekend. Live coverage of all college and pro basketball here with in-game live and game time decisions. And then Davis and I will be right back here on Monday recapping the first day of Major League Baseball spring training. For me and Sports Grid, I'll be at the ballpark for the first time Tuesday as Miami takes on St. Louis in Jupiter, Florida. So hopefully be live from there for a segment or two. And also, of course, we'll have coverage on everything happening in the Grapefruit and Cactus League as well. But here are our headlines here as we begin on this Friday. 9 games in the NBA tonight. Indiana-Boston will headline it. Davis says take the Celtics minus the points. Oh boy, somebody texted me this morning saying Tulane looked like a good pick against Cincinnati. That doesn't happen very often, but Tulane is 6-point dogs taking on the Bearcats at 4 o'clock Eastern. So I'm going to have to circle that game, maybe check it out. Purdue takes on Penn State tonight in the Big Ten. Jackson State, Mississippi Valley State. Oh no, FCS canceled already this early? So no game this weekend due to COVID positive testing. I have not watched any of the FCS, Davis, yet. I'm guessing that golf is on your menu this weekend. Are you watching any of this FCS football or no?
I have not watched it yet, but it is like officially on my docket now. You know, I've been trying to clear the time for it. I'm just such a sucker for football. I was telling you on the show yesterday that I was watching the XFL when it was on. And you know what? Mm-hmm. Even in the summer months when they have it, I have been a viewer of the Canadian Football League. I've watched those games on weekday nights. I think Canadian football is really fun. They have 12 players, bigger field. So I will definitely be tuning in to some of these games moving forward. And actually, I just saw this morning that there is a DFS operator that is offering contests for these FCS college football games. So just it's a wide, weird world we're living in, Craig.
Yeah, no doubt. So what happened in day one of golf yesterday, if anybody was not watching? Anything interesting?
I mean, probably the most interesting thing for a lot of people was that Matthew Wolf shot an 83 with 4 birdies. I mean, imagine having a round with 4 birdies where you shot an 83 and then he withdrew. As you and I are talking, Tony Finau is burning his way through the course. Bryson, my people remember my, yep, my pre-tournament pick, Bryson DeChambeau, mm-hmm, he had a miserable round. I mean, just absolutely brutal. Couldn't putt, you know, was hitting every bunker. It was just an adventure out there for him, looking a little bit better today. But it is a beautiful golf course. That was one thing I noticed, and looks super difficult to play. Not a golf course that my 17 handicap would be able to pitter-patter around out there. It'd be a long day on the greens for me.
Yeah, I always look forward to Saturdays for that because my son, who is 8 years old, he's been taking lessons for 3 years, and we play, I don't know if we play 9, but we play probably like 5, you know, somewhere along those lines every Saturday at 9 a.m. So that's on my schedule, at least for tomorrow. It is kind of hot here, Davis. It's like summer weather here in South Florida. I don't know how cold it is by you in St. Louis, but it's like almost 85, 90 here already.
It is not 85-90 here quite yet, but I did on Monday. I went out, hit the range. My game is not in a great spot right now. I'm pulling everything left, which is generally not my problem. Because what happens when you start golfing is you slice everything because you don't get your wrists all the way through. Then when you learn to avoid that, you realize that you've naturally been coming down on the ball to a left direction. So then you have to figure out how to change your hands and change your swing there. But it is about 45 degrees outside where I'm at today. Maybe a range session is in order this afternoon. Have another podcast recording after you and I are done. But it might be time for me to go out and whack some balls around.
But before we get to Jim Sannis coming up, I know we mentioned it in the first hour. People could go back on watch on demand. We didn't expand at all on Russell Wilson. I know that you said that you weren't surprised at all yesterday, and I was. So it shows you what I know about the potential of maybe him leaving Seattle. Does this make it more real for you? Let's forget Dallas and just look at everywhere else. I know that you don't want him in Dallas, but is it a real thing or not?
Yeah, it's a real thing. I mean, we see this. This is going to become more and more common, by the way, because head coaches of the NFL, they're in their 60s, they're in their 70s. They don't want to throw the ball. They want to run the dang ball, right? That's what NFL head coaches want to do. But these quarterbacks, right, they're looking at Patrick Mahomes, they're looking at Josh Allen, and they're going, well, these guys are just put in the perfect position to succeed. Their teams draft nothing but elite, fast wide receivers. They just want to chuck the ball 45 times a game, put up video game numbers, and win games 45 to 28. And Russell Wilson is going, we can't even figure out how to get a good offensive coordinator in. We can't even figure out how to support me. We can't figure out our offensive line. Why would I stay here, take a hit to my numbers, never have a chance to win MVP? Like, why do I want to play in Seattle for a coach who wants to run the ball? What's in it for me?
Yeah, no, I it seems feasible that that is the case. It's just shocking that you could get a generational quarterback and not move to that. And it's my big beef with Vic Fangio in Denver. Like, I don't think that's ever changing there, Davis. I think that no matter what you hear going into next year, I don't care who is there, I'm out on Denver. I just hate the way that they run that offense, and I hate the way that their offense has rolled the last couple of years with him. All right, Jim Sannis joins us next. We dive into a little NASCAR, Homestead Miami Speedway's Dixie 400. He'll give you the betting options and the DFS options over on FanDuel. And then Gray Albright from Rasball.com has some of his thoughts on the early drafting season. So make sure you stay on the grid and stay tuned. We got plenty more fantasy sports today. Jim Sannis back to back with Gray Albright. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We're back on the track this week at NASCAR, about 40-minute drive from me at Homestead Miami Speedway, where the Dixie Vodka 400 is set to go off this weekend. And we're bringing in our guy again, Jim Sannis from NumberFire. You can follow him on Twitter at Jim Sannis. I know we've kind of painted him as the NASCAR guy, but truthfully, he does golf, baseball, football, basketball, everything. We'll be talking baseball DFS with him throughout the season. But given the fact that baseball has not yet started and NASCAR has, we bring him back yet again. And Jim, if you were in on the winner the last 2 weeks at the track, my gosh, I don't even think that you need to bet the rest of the season, because hitting an 80 and a 60-1 in back-to-back weeks in the first two races of the season is huge.
Yeah, absolutely. You're basically just, you've paid your dues the entire year. And honestly, like, they weren't totally off the wall recommendations. There were smart people on both those drivers, both Michael McDowell and Christopher Bell, especially Bell, like a guy who did well in road races in the Xfinity series, moving to better equipment with Joe Gibbs Racing. The talent was there, the speed was there, so he made sense. So hopefully some of you were on them, because I do think that they made a lot of sense. Now, this week is different because it's a speed-based track, which means we're probably not going to see a long shot make it. But, like, I guess last year, like, Cole Custer won at a track like this. Austin Dillon did, too. So it's not totally out of the realm of possibilities, but very much more a top-heavy type race this week.
All right, so let's take a look over on FanDuel at the current odds as it stands to win the race at Homestead. And it does seem pretty wide open based on the favorites this week, as Denny Hamlin is 5-1 to win the race, followed by Chase Elliott at 5.5-1. Kevin Harvick I have here at 6-1. Truex Jr. at 7. Kyle Busch at 9. Kyle Larson also at 9. And then Joey Logano is 10-1. Not quite the long shot that Keselowski and Ryan Blaney are this week. So, of course, there's a lot of different ways you can bet this. Top three podium also on FanDuel, too. We can get into that if you wish, Jim. But most importantly, who do you think is the winner this week?
I think it'll be Denny Hamlin. So I was kind of disappointed when I saw the odds as they came out. I was hoping that, like, maybe John Sheeran at FanDuel Sportsbook might be asleep at the wheel a little bit, but he definitely was on his game, putting Hamlin at 5-1, totally justified. My win simulations have Hamlin winning 16% of the time, and the implied odds at 5-1 are 16.7. So honestly, like, I think you can justify betting Hamlin. Like, there's not quote unquote value on him, but I think it's a very fair number at him being 5-1, and it's justified that he's there. Last year, there were six total races on these flatter 1.5 mile tracks, which is the category I put Homestead in, and Hamlin won two of those, including this one at Homestead last year. So I think you can actually justify going Hamlin at 5-1, but my favorite guy at the top here is Ryan Blaney. He is 14-1, and Blaney was third in Homestead last year behind Hamlin, led 70 laps in that race, really good average running position, and he was solid the entire year on tracks like this. As mentioned, six total races on the flatter 1.5 mile tracks, and in those races, Blaney had a top eight average running position every single time. He had a top five average running position in 4 out of 6 races, so he was consistently at the front. Didn't capitalize. He didn't win in any of those races. And that's been kind of a trademark for Blaney so far in the Cup Series, not taking advantage of his opportunities to get wins. I think that'll happen this year at some point. Could be Homestead. And I think that once that does happen, we're not going to see him at 14-1 anymore. So I want to take advantage here while I can. Get Blaney at 14-1 for the win this week and take advantage of the speed he has on this track type. Now, I mentioned that, like, it's kind of a top-heavy event, and I'm not really looking at long shots. So I think if you want to go longer, I'd instead look towards top 10 odds as opposed to win odds. And two guys I like there are Matt DiBenedetto and Chase Briscoe. DiBenedetto plus 230 to finish top 10. Briscoe is plus 250. DiBenedetto last year had three total top fives, and all three came on track just like Homestead. It was not at Homestead, but he did have three total top fives in those six races last year. He had four top tens across 11 races at 1.5 mile track, so a 36% rate. The applied odds here are 30%. I think that's good enough to take DiBenedetto. Chase Briscoe was tremendous on tracks like this in the Xfinity Series. He actually won in Homestead. It was one of four wins he had in the tracks like this in the Xfinity Series. And he has good equipment. Stewart Haas Racing can definitely get him a top 10. So I say if you're not looking at the guys like Hamlin or Blaney as winners, I want to dive into the top 10 mark, and I do think there is quite a bit of value in both DiBenedetto and Briscoe at more than plus 200.
Yeah, and no love for Michael McDowell, who's still 7-1, even to get into the top 10 this weekend at Homestead. Shows you maybe a one-hit wonder there at Daytona, no doubt. All right, now let's move over to the DFS side, and let's kind of give a little bit of an explanation how this will potentially work this week. Let's start off with the top tier. Is it just as simple as Hamlin has to be included here, Jim? Or are you going to set several lineups? How would that work?
Yeah, I do like Hamlin quite a bit because this race is long. It's 267 laps, so there are 26.7 points available for laps led on FanDuel for this week, which means you can afford to target drivers starting at the front. Hamlin is starting on the pole, so there's no place differential upside, but what you're getting is access to clean air right away and the guy who has shown he can dominate races. So I do think that Hamlin is a really solid option at $13,500 over on FanDuel for this week. I also like his teammate, Martin Truex Jr. Truex, a little bit lower salary. He is $12,500, starting back in ninth, so a little bit of place differential juice there. And we saw him get better as the year went along on the 1.5 mile track. So I think that that was good for Truex. But I think for me, Craig, the way that I want to play things for this week is take one true stud, potentially Hamlin. Like, he would be the true stud there, and then get to the second tier. I don't necessarily think this is a great week to jam in two of the true upper tier guys. And part of that is because that second tier on FanDuel is really good. You got Kyle Busch, Ryan Blaney is there. Kyle Larson, who's historically been tremendous at Homestead, is there. Joey Logano, Brad Keselowski. That second tier on FanDuel is locked and loaded for this week. It's not just Blaney there. I think that Larson, very much viable. But Busch is starting back in 24th position. So he actually has quite a bit of place differential upside from there. And he has the capability to win this race. He is at 11% win odds in my simulations of this race. He doesn't need to win to pay off at starting back in 24th. So to me, Craig, I would say you get your Hamlin at the top, you start there, dip down to that second tier, get one out of Busch, Blaney, Larson, Logano, Keselowski, and then dive into the value plays. And that's where we get to the same guys we talked about before for the top 10 odds, DiBenedetto, and also we talked about Chase Briscoe too. Both those guys, lower salaried, starting in the back, a lot of place differential upside with them. So I think they make a lot of sense. And going with a more balanced lineup, not jamming in two of the studs, lets you get back in that mid-range too. William Byron is there. Tyler Reddick is there. Those two guys are starting outside the top 30 and should have a lot of speed. So to me, Craig, I think this week is about balance in daily fantasy, not jamming in too many studs, trying to pick guys from different tiers, avoid the true punt options for this week, and take advantage of the guys starting the back, like DiBenedetto, Briscoe, Eric Almirola actually is not too bad as well, starting back in 16th, and then Byron and Reddick starting further back too. So a balanced roster, I think, is the ideal way to build things for Homestead this week.
What's interesting is that one of the first races that I covered at Homestead, I think, if I'm not mistaken, was when Ryan Newman was a rookie or back very early on. And Jim, he was really hot when he first started in NASCAR. I know that he's taken some dips through the years, but he's 3-1 here. So, I mean, look, I have no basis, no data, no number fire, but that's my dart throw for this week.
Yes.
I mean, I recognize the name and I remember covering him and speaking to him and interviewing him. I mean, we're going back probably almost 10 years, but now he's a veteran on there. But one of the few names that's still around from the Earnhardt and Gordon and Mark Martin era from when I was covering NASCAR a lot more often. I used to work for a place that they had a car in the race. So
I mean, back in those days, Ryan, I think the nickname was the Rocket, where he would win the pole basically every week. And like, he's not that anymore, but like, it's weird to think back to how much things have changed since then, because just like every week you knew Newman was going to be fast, super fun guy to watch. And he's definitely changed to be kind of, you know, a tougher guy to pass. I think this is his reputation now more so than the speed, but yeah, he's been around there for quite a long time for sure.
Yep. 3-1 for Ryan Newman this week. All right, Jim. Well, good luck this week with the race at Homestead. Of course, I'll be checking it out being here in South Florida. And where are we headed next week?
Yeah. Next week, we're sticking with the 1.5 mile tracks, I believe. I think they're out in Las Vegas this week. Okay. So they've been in Florida for most of the year. I think that they're sticking with the 1.5 mile track. So we'll get good data on what to expect for that next race here in Las Vegas, a very similar track. So I think good data this week to help us apply for next week.
Excellent. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Same to you, Craig.
All right. Follow Jim on Twitter at Jim Sanis and all of his work over at NumberFire. Get on over to FanDuel. Take some of that advice. Make some money this weekend. Play some DFS if you don't mind. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with some fantasy baseball discussion right after this. Make sure you stay on the grid. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Fantasy baseball is officially here. Spring games begin this weekend. To break it all down with us is our guy talking fantasy baseball, Gray Albright from Razzball and Razzball.com. Gray and I will be going head-to-head in the National League Tout Wars coming up in the auction as we get to the month of March. Gray, it is great to see you once again. Hope you had a good week.
I had a great week. Thanks, Mr. Mish. It's good to see you as well. I am seeing some videos out of spring training with Klenik, the Mariners prospect. Man, am I excited. What is going on? I am so pumped for baseball.
Yeah, we're almost there. And let's start with this. This weekend, starting Saturday and mostly on Sunday, spring training games begin. Now, we know that the televised portion of this is probably going to pop in next week. On top of that, a lot of the games are going to be seven innings. Historically speaking, for Gray Albright, when the games begin, the spring games begin, what are you looking for in these games?
Well, I think mostly, you know, I say every year that with spring training, I think the best thing you can do is avoid looking at any stats. The number one thing I look for is health of players And then number two is where they're playing and if they're playing. Like if, you know, like today I saw David Bell announce that Senzel was going to be his everyday center fielder, which is great. And, you know, maybe, but maybe that is him saying to Senzel, like, hey, you have an opportunity here. Let's see what you can do. But I wouldn't count on him necessarily being the everyday center fielder until I see Senzel actually in center field playing every day and Shogu Akiyama, you know, playing all over the outfield or just being a platoon or a backup guy.
Yeah, no, and we'll find out when we see the lineups and see these guys start to play. I tend to pay pretty good attention, especially to the Grapefruit League, because I go to a lot of the games. But I got to tell you, the first week of spring training games is just completely meaningless. There's really nothing to take from it. Even the lineups are just wacky. They're just trying to get through the seven innings. So I think that the best shape of the life conversation is worthy of bringing up here again, because something happened earlier this week that we have not seen in a long time. The reported 42 pounds that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has lost, Gray, to me is the most I've ever heard a player ever say that he's lost. I am skeptical, clearly, of that number. When it was 42, I thought, okay, maybe 10 or 20 or even 30. 42 is like a new person. So yeah. I'm very skeptical that that is the case. But I am more optimistic, potentially, to hear that he can at least move around a little bit. Because I got to tell you, last year, defensively and offensively, the guy could not even move.
Yeah, I mean, 42 pounds is essentially the size of my wife. I mean, that is really a lot of weight. That's like crazy. I didn't even know. Honestly, looking at Vlad Jr., I mean, you know, I'm no body specialist, but I didn't even think he had 42 pounds to lose. I mean, that's a lot. I heard the same. I'm like, you know, the best shape of his life narratives are that's, I mean, for me, that's a lot of just ignore it. Obviously, with Vlad Jr., that's something that, I mean, I'm interested in seeing how different, you know, that makes him. But I mean, this was also a guy, the you know, not to be a Debbie Downer, but this was a guy who was really good 42 pounds ago. So I don't want him to get, like, I don't know, I guess this could be make him better, but he was good already. I don't know if I'm necessarily saying, like, okay, 42 pounds. Now he's going to be 42 pounds less, but better. I mean, it could be like, he could be like, you know, too light. Give him some weight. I don't know.
Yeah. The we're going over win totals a lot on the show, Gray, this week. And the one question that I'd have for you is that we're seeing some astronomically low totals for some of the poor teams in baseball. The Pittsburgh Pirates are sitting below 60. They're 57.5. The Texas Rangers are at 67. The Rockies are in the 60s as well. When you get ready for your fantasy drafts, is it more of a chore to draft some of these players that are on bad teams? I know that Baltimore is not the best example for that because they've had guys that have hit offensively. I mean, they've had Renato Nunez, who's clobbered the ball, and you know, VR was really good in fantasy 2 years ago. I'm not really talking about them, but like these middling teams, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Colorado, Texas. I mean, do you identify players on those teams? Because it feels like to me I need to do a little bit more research just to figure out who's going to play.
Yeah, no, I definitely, I like, you know, especially in deeper leagues, I love going for guys on weaker teams because, like, say, you mentioned the Tigers, say, Jaime Candelaria. Mm-hmm. Like, he is a guy who should have everyday playing time. And the weaker the team, the less a chance, like, you know, someone's underperforming and they get, you know, kicked to the bench or something. So, like, a guy like in, you know, also, you also mentioned Texas, like Dan Dunning, if he's in the rotation, I'm excited. And especially in a deeper league, because there's no reason to take him out of the rotation because the Rangers aren't playing for anything other than to see what he can do in the rotation. So, like, guys like on deeper, on weaker teams in deeper leagues, you're looking at guys that are probably going to get more playing time. So that's it's actually a benefit, I think, for deeper leagues.
Yeah, especially if you know the player pool. I think that that's crucial. A team like Pittsburgh, outside of Brian Reynolds and Ke'Bryan Hayes, who is there? I mean, you have to know. You have to do your research on that. That's why we do what we do. And over at Razzball.com, Gray and Rudy do a fantastic job. They have all those rankings over there as well. 2 years ago, Gray, we probably spent weeks, if we spent a lot of time on coronavirus last year, 2 years ago, we spent all of our time talking about Shohei Ohtani. All of this controversy about, is he a hitter? Is he a pitcher? And the league he's in? And is he one guy? Is he two? Is he five guys? I mean, I don't even know how many guys Ohtani could be. But there seems to be quite a bit of optimism this year with Ohtani. Not in the fantasy community, though. It seems like no one is buying back in on him. And I'm wondering your opinion. Do you think that he's a pitcher? Do you think that he's a hitter? Do you think that he's both? Should we not forget about Ohtani going into the season?
I for the longest time, I've been a guy who has been like, I am not drafting Ohtani anywhere because I prefer, like, I would prefer he was a hitter or a pitcher, one or the other. Like, both of them, I think, actually subtract from his fantasy value. But at this point, in 2021, you look at his ADP, which is around, like, you know, 250 overall, and I'm like, wow, I'm actually interested in Ohtani this year if he's going for that cheap. I mean, there's a certain point where everyone becomes a bargain. I think Ohtani's made the turn, and now he's suddenly, he's a bargain in most drafts I've seen so far.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think that when a player gets that kind of hype, there's such disappointment when it doesn't work out. And here we are 2 years later where he's just not really a big part of the discussion in fantasy. And I think potentially that he should be. Okay, the other part of this is that we saw last week, I saw what was called the FSGA draft. I don't get really too caught up in these leagues, Gray, as you know, when they're drafted by different people. I feel like it's important to maybe have a bigger name than draft in some of these things. So, but the one thing that I did notice is that, at least for the first draft of what they would call the season in our community, the first four rounds were all pitchers. I mean, it was just all pitchers for the first four rounds. So why, though? Why? I'm not understanding. Why? Because if the narrative is that not the guys aren't going to throw a lot of innings, why is everyone taking all of those guys that are not going to throw a lot of innings? Just take them at the end of the draft. And I'm just not following this situation. You're telling me I can't get to 900 innings in a 15-team mixed league?
Right. I know. No, hey, man, you're preaching to the choir here with me. I've been saying this for the last like month and a half, that everyone is going so heavy on starters up top, but I don't get why. Like, no, and no one's really confirmed to me a reason that I'm happy with. Like, some people are saying, like, oh, middle-level pitchers aren't as good when there's less innings. But that's not true at all. Like, you know, just an example off the top of my head, like Marco Gonzalez last year had a top 10 starter year because no one threw any innings. Like last year on my teams in general, like I drafted across multiple teams, Maeda, Trevor Bauer, LeMay, Burns, Woodruff, like, and none of those guys were going in the top 10 starters last year. So you're saying that this year suddenly all the starters are going to be reliable, but no other year they were reliable? Like,
it doesn't
what?
Make sense. Yeah.
It makes no sense at all.
Yeah, and I feel like it was like a snowball effect. I felt like it was a fantasy football draft where the running back went and then all the running backs went, or a baseball right. draft where the closer went and then all the closers went. And I wasn't paying that close attention to it, but all I needed to do was basically look at the grid for the first five rounds and thought, my gosh, like – everyone followed the herd on this one. It was just one person started and everybody backed it up. And I got to tell you, going into the season in my first five picks, I'll have a starting pitcher, but I ain't going to have four. I mean, I can assure you that I'm not doing
that. No, I know. And specifically too, if you want to talk specifics real super fast, like you look at all these starters going early, but then you see someone like Blake Snell, who has won a Cy Young, still a very young pitcher. He's going to the Padres, which is a stacked lineup, a great field to be pitching in, and he's going after like 12 other starters. It's like, what is going on? Like, less pitching, less innings on an arm. So a guy is going to be more valuable if he only throws 150 innings, which Blake Snell will only throw 150 innings, but that's going to be a great 150
that's
innings.
Right.
Like,
yeah, no, it's a great point.
I mean, it makes no sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. All right, Gray, always great catching up with you. Have a good weekend. Next weekend, a much deeper dive in the fantasy baseball scene, that's for sure. Have a great week, okay?
All right, late.
All right, Gray Albright, Razzball and Razzball.com, breaking down some fantasy baseball discussion. Fantasy or Reality is coming up right here on Fantasy Sports Day. So stay on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
As we got Fantasy Reality coming up here on our show, don't forget, Davis and I will be right back here on Monday with another edition of our program. We'll have our 2021 season win total, Davis, for the Pittsburgh Pirates coming up on Monday. And you may say, why are we doing the Pirates? Well, we do every team, and we treat every team fairly. We give them ample time. We'll build cases for and against. But, Davis, I just want to warn you in advance that the Pirates have the lowest number on the board this year. It is below 60 to start their season on their season win total. So just be warned going into Monday. We got to do every team. It's not fair to leave anybody out.
We got to. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, the Pirates, we got to know their roster for fantasy baseball purposes. They're going to be giving 500 plate appearances to some guys who are, you know, literally free in drafts. So We gotta roll up our sleeves and do the work, even if it's not the most appetizing work that we get to do.
Yep. So Monday, stay tuned for that. I know that'll draw really everybody in to Monday's show. We'll have our highest rated show for sure. But here is our fantasy or reality as we close out our week here on this Friday. We'll start off with Bryce Harper. Has been talking a little bit recently. I guess you could say he's always been outspoken. He says what's on his mind. I've always been a fan of him for that. But he said that the NL East is a juggernaut division. And when you look at it, you have basically four teams that are predicted to win more than they lose. So that would tell you that's the only team essentially in only division in baseball where that's predicted to happen, where the Braves, the Nationals, the Mets, and the Phillies are all predicted to win somewhere around the 80-game mark. Of course, the Marlins are in the 70s. Fantasy reality, Davis, NL East, best division in baseball.
I have to say that this is a fantasy. Maybe they accumulate the most total wins, but the best division is the NL West. They have the Dodgers, they have the Padres. And then, you know, as we've been doing these previews of teams over the last 2 weeks, you know, the Giants are not bottom dwellers. They have professional hitters. They have, you know, a decent starting rotation. And then the same is true of the Diamondbacks as well. In fact, I think that if Dalton Varsho kind of delivers on his promise, they have Cole Calhoun, Kettle Marte, Christian Walker, David Peralta, and Dalton Varsho, all as above average Major League Baseball hitters. And I think that the NL West is more likely to provide us a World Series winner as well. So I'm going to sell this. I'm going to say that this is a fantasy because I think the reality is that the NL West is the best division in baseball.
I'm going to say reality. And the reason why is, look, you are correct. They have two of potentially the best teams. But I am not putting the Padres in that category yet. Just because their win total is there, to me, doesn't equal the four other teams in the NL East. If you said to me, paint a scenario where the Braves are better than the Padres, I could easily do it. If you said to me, paint a scenario where the Mets are better than the Padres, I could probably do that too. I don't know about Washington, and I certainly can't promise Philadelphia, but given those four teams who are all potential postseason teams, I'm going to say that the East is better. Not to mention that I think that Miami is way better at the bottom than Colorado is, And I'm not as bullish on the Giants. I do think that the Giants, I don't know if they're a 100 loss team, but I don't think they're very good. Diamondbacks, I'm with you, though. I think they're better than their number is. I'll say reality. I like the NL East best. You like the NL West best. We'll see how that plays out. Well, Russell Wilson gave some teams potentially that he'd be interested in going to through his agent. I'm guessing either there will be a very quick walk back that he's in Seattle or he will be traded. I don't know which one, but one of the two is probably coming soon. We know Deshaun Watson wants out of Houston. Fantasy or reality, Wilson and Watson are both back with their teams in 2021. Davis, is this fantasy or reality?
This, Craig, is a fantasy. Not only do I think that Deshaun Watson is a huge favorite to be on a different team in 2021, whether it be the New York Jets, whether it be the Miami Dolphins, the Pittsburgh Steelers, a team that has not been dropped in this conversation yet, but I think that they should be looking in a different direction for quarterbacks. I think the Las Vegas Raiders should be looking in a different direction for quarterbacks. You know, there are a lot of teams, obviously, that could use, you know, the sixth best quarterback in the NFL or however you want to rank Deshaun Watson. But as we talked about at the top of the hour, I also think that Russell Wilson should be considered a favorite to be on a different team because if the discussions have gotten to the point to where Russell Wilson says, oh, I don't want to be traded, but if you do trade me, I'm only going to these four teams. It tells me that if the discussion has gotten that far, it's a snowball, right? Once you start rolling that ball down the hill, it's just going to pick up momentum. It's going to pick up some mass, and it's harder and harder to get that snowball from rolling down the hill. So I think that not only is this a fantasy, but I think that this is going to be the most quarterback movement that we see in an offseason in NFL history up until this point. I think that this will be the biggest quarterback carousel offseason that we'll ever see.
Yeah, I'm going to also say fantasy here. I'm going to say Wilson is back. I'm going to say Wilson is back with Seattle. This to me would blow my mind. Watson doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, that's even when this was all happening, it feels like there's a complete teardown. When Joe was hosting the show with me, Davis, I'll tell you kind of what I explained to him. You know, and Joe Pizzapia, you could see him on the Sunday show on Diamond Bets. You know, Joe is a what I would call a prisoner of the moment. So as soon as this came out, it was immediately, Watson's going to get traded. He's going to get traded tomorrow. And I'm like, listen to me. The Houston Texans are doing exactly the right thing. They should not give any team any indication or any interest in trading this guy and play this right up until, Davis, the day of the draft. I mean, there is no reason to move him until then. They would be making an epic mistake. They have to play this right down to the wire and force some team, like on eBay, to outbid them for the player. It does you no good to trade arguably the second best or third best quarterback in the league right now. And he's going to get traded. We all know what's going to happen. But wait, but right. There's no rush for this. The draft is not for another 2 months. Hang on for dear life. Let him yell, scream, cry. Everybody knows what he wants to do. And then come draft night, some team will jump in. They'll mortgage their entire future. The Houston Texans, once again, will have a future. It will not be 2021, but they will have a future again. And that is how that deal gets done. He's not Carson Wentz. This is another category of player here with Deshaun Watson. So fantasy for me as well. All right, finally, yesterday, wow, what a big announcement on Twitter, social media. Davis has a really strong following on social media. I have some followers every once in a while here and now and then again as well. But Davis, both and I have jobs to get paid. And we sort of like are giving our content here on the show. So it does create a very interesting dynamic, Davis, because right now you and I can create super followers on Twitter where we can charge anything that we want. Essentially, the buying rate looks to be about $4.99, either a week or a month. People can click Davis Matic. Davis Matic can start just selling things on Twitter and start monetizing himself. And I can do the same. I don't know how all my different employers I would feel about, because I do a lot of different things and cover a lot of different things too. But it does beg the question that with Davis's followers, he's going to create a super following and charge for this. Oh my gosh, is this true? Fantasy or reality? Davis and Craig will have super followers on Twitter in 2021.
I'm going to say for me, this is a reality. I mean, one thing you'll learn about me, Craig, I love a good hustle. I love to turn whatever it is that I'm doing into money. You know, most of my hobbies, daily fantasy, seasonal fantasy, sports cards, Top Shot, it's all about grinding out an extra buck here or there. Now, I will add a caveat to this saying I need to see how they roll out the super followers. Like, if I don't like the way they roll it out, if I think that it's too aspirational, if I think that the price points are too high, or if I just don't like the business model, then whatever, I won't sign up for it. But if it kind of works in a similar situation to how Twitch works, you know, the video game streaming and stuff like right. that, and you can watch, you can interact for free, and then, you know, if you really like it, if you're a huge fan, you can contribute money, or you can tip, or, you know, a lot of streamers do things for charity and things like that, then yeah, definitely I will sign up. I mean, I would love to be a part of this, because who doesn't want to turn their social media profile into some extra spending money so I can buy more Vladimir Guerrero PSA 10. So for me, this is going to be a reality. For you, I'm going to guess that this will also be a reality, but it's an educated guess. I don't feel super sure.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be among the first to roll it out, because I'm not really concerned about how they roll it out. I have to see if this is something that's I'm like kind of allowed to do, because it's, you know, I'm sort of working for different companies giving out my content for free. So what exactly am I doing here that is worthy of people paying me directly? Now, I can tell you the way that this is really promising, as far as I am concerned, Davis, is that there are some really strong reporters and TV hosts that have lost their jobs over the last year. And I'm very happy to see that maybe this is a way that they can monetize that by creating content, and people can support them by doing that. Fortunately, here at Sports Grid, we were able to keep everybody during this time, thanks to our great management. And that's not necessary. We're all still getting paid to do what we do. But for me, I'm going to say I will fantasy initially, but there is definitely that chance that it could be a reality at some point. I just kind of have to see what it is that I can do and can't do, and walk that line of, hey, you're working for us and they're paying and now you're doing that for free. Like, that's always, Davis, the thing for me. Like, I've always struggled with that. Like, is it the right thing to do? Is it the wrong thing to do? Because I got to tell you, the one thing that I don't do, but I know that some people have, and they've had success with it, is Patreon, I believe. That's what it's called, right? Now, for me, I personally have no issue with anybody hustling. I could care less if you're making a dollar or a million. I don't care even how you do it. But the sense that I get is some people have a negative connotation toward Patreon. That it's like, I've heard like, oh, do you really need to get $3 or something like that? I've just heard that before. I don't know if it's real or not. I've never used it before, so I don't know. And if this has that negative connotation to it too, I'm not sure that I want to do that. I guess that's my concern.
So I think it depends on what space you're in. You and I are really involved in sports wagering, right? And there's definitely a negative connotation to charging for picks, right? But in other industries, like in art, you know, entertainment podcasts, things like that, Patreon has no negative connotation, where it's actually something that people really support. Like, I subscribe to a bunch of Patreons for podcasts, right? Of things that are super niche, you know, Star Wars and Simpsons and, you know, things like that, that are super niche. They're really in-depth podcasts and you know, they have access to Discord and all these other things. And there's like no negative connotation in that industry. So I think it depends on what you use it for. Like, if you're using it to sell picks, for sure a negative connotation. But if you run it like, oh, people just are entertained by what I do, they're paying, it's like paying a ticket to go to a movie, then the general sense I get is basically no negative connotation.
And by the way, I have no issue with selling picks whatsoever either. I know that there's not a negative connotation with that, but remember, the person that's selling the picks, there's also someone on the other side choosing to buy the picks. I have no issue with any hustle that anybody does, but it's just a matter of, for me, making that choice. Is that something that I would want to do? It definitely has my curiosity, but the one thing that I would say, the most positive thing to come out of this, no matter what, is with all of the layoffs that have happened over the past year, there are some really good people that are out there. It is not that easy sometimes to find people's content that are out of work. This will give them the opportunity maybe to post it somewhere right there on Twitter. So I am a fan of that for sure. Maybe I'll do something on how to grade 1987 Fleer cards, and I'll charge $5 a month for that. Now we're talking about something that's up in my wheelhouse. All right. Coming up next, Sports Grid 60, and then we have to shut down Fantasy Sports today for the weekend. Stay tuned.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
And welcome back. It is Fantasy Sports Today on SportsGrid and SportsGrid.com. I'm Craig Mish, along with Davis Maddock. As a reminder, we're here every Monday through Friday from noon to 2 Eastern. Make sure you watch all of our episodes on demand on our YouTube channel. Our show is about to come to end for the week. So let's turn it over to Davis Maddock and see what he's got to wrap it all up for us this Friday. Davis, what you got?
So my Sports Grid 60 yesterday was about a classic animated series about The Simpsons. And I wondered how many people who watched The Simpsons when they were growing up also watched Futurama, which is another Matt Groening show. And you know what? I'm ready for a controversial Sports Grid 60 today. Ooh. I think that I enjoy seasons 2 and 3 of Futurama, which is another Matt Groening show written by David X. Cohen. That I actually think is better. I think that Futurama at its best is more funny and better, you know, insights into society than even some of those early Simpsons episodes. So if you are a Simpsons fan, you've been watching it for 33 years now or whatever, treat yourself to a couple episodes of Futurama this weekend. That's your viewing assignment from me this weekend.
I've got a couple of things to end on here. And, you know, one of the things that I got to do here is, it's funny, I got to apologize to my wife here on the show, because the other day my wife calls me and I'm sitting in the house doing something or I don't know what. And she says, don't go throw the ball outside with my son. And I said, why? And she said, because there's a coyote outside in the community. And I hung up the phone. And then she called back. She said, why'd you hang up? I'm like, there's no coyote in our community. We live in South Florida. Well, lo and behold, we got a note from our association that there was a, not Wiley coyote, but a coyote that was loose inside our community. So my apologies. I thought we just had iguanas in our backyard and lizards and snakes and turtles and fish. I guess we have coyotes now too. Go figure. Sorry. All right, that'll do it for our show, and that'll do it for the week. Thank you again, of course, to James at LTN and our producer, Brett Levy. Fantastic job all week. Ryan and Danny, Davis Maddock, I'm Craig Mitch. See you Monday.